Hello, and welcome to The Prestige, all about films, filmmaking, and film theory.
Each week, we pick a movie, review it, talk about it, and then discuss some of the ideas and themes that it throws up.
And as always, we end with our recommendations for further reading, as we call it, but further film watching, for other films to sort of watch after you've seen this film.
Before we kick off, a quick catch-up, as we do every time, on what else we've been watching. So, Rob.
I've been to the cinema.
Check you out.
I know. Those of you who are long-term listeners realise newborn baby not been to the cinema in quite a while. But she's in nursery now, so we've had a couple of days with a bit more spare time. So, my wife and I yesterday went to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Now, I recall you have seen this,
yes.
Sam.
Yeah.
And you liked it, as I recall.
Yes, I had reservations about certain parts of it, and I thought it was a bit long, but overall, I liked it.
I thought it was brilliant.
Okay.
I don't think it was as good as the first one. I think the first one, in many ways, was bottled lightning in terms of the cast, and I think that certainly the cast are falling into very easy routines and a very easy-going style, but him on the main kind of crew. But I very much enjoyed the expanded world that's bringing in the new bad guy. And I enjoy sort of the new wider world of the Ravagers. I'm not going to touch on any spoilers, obviously, because this isn't a part of that show. But I must say that if you haven't seen it, please do. It is Marvel at its funniest. There were a couple of points in this in which I probably cried with laughter. Predominantly the bit with the toe, if anyone knows what that means, if you have seen it. I just thought that was brilliant. What about you, Sam?
This week, I've been to the cinema a couple of times. My other half was away, so I could go and watch unsuitable films that we wouldn't see together. No, not unsuitable at all. The second one was one that she wouldn't have wanted to see, so I was happy to go on my own. And it was brilliant. It was the film Get Out. Which I have wanted to see for quite a while, and I think it's towards the very end of its run now, because it was on once a day at 11 o'clock at night, so there weren't many people in the cinema. But it was brilliant. It's about racial politics to start with, and then it quickly becomes a slasher movie, and it's just great fun. And Bradley Whitford's in it, you remember from The West Wing, Josh in The West Wing, and he's very good. There are some good performances from new acting talent, very good, and I really enjoyed it. I would say that was one of my films of the year so far. But what was also one of my films of the year so far, and I wasn't expecting it to be at all, was a film I saw the day before, because it was the only thing that was on at the time that I wanted to go to the cinema. And it was another one right at the end of its run, and it's called Their Finest.
Oh, yes.
Adapted from either a short story or a play or both, about the performance of a film, the production of a film during World War II. And it was, I mean, it had Bill Nighy in it, it had Arthur.
Yeah.
Doing a Welsh accent. It was a film about the production of a film. It was set in World War II. It was pretty much absolutely everything I hate. And yet it was brilliant. It was the narrative did not go in the way that you expect it to, and it was very moving at times and very funny at other times, and just it was a standout film for me, one of my films of the year, and I really wasn't expecting it to be. That was Their Finest.
Oh, fair enough. I've got it in my to watch list, obviously be well on the line, but that is something I want to catch up on, and not just because I've got a big crush on Gemma. That's not why, you know. Yeah. It's partly why, but not all why. Fair enough, sir. So Sam, tell us about the film this week.
So, this week we are concluding the Nolanverse of films with the final Nolan Batman film, The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
You are as precious to me as you were to your own mother and father. I swore to them that I would protect you, and I haven't.
The mayor's gonna dump him in the spring.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But he's a hero.
A war hero. This is peacetime.
The Dark Knight Rises is the last in the Christopher Nolan series of Batman films, released in 2012. So we're coming to the end of these Nolan films, to Rob's relief. And it's the final Bruce Wayne film, if we, as we intend to, skate over the horrors of BVS Dodge, Dawn of Justice. If you want to punish yourself by listening to an episode about this, then we did do one when it came out, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
I'm not watching it again, people. No, I'm not doing it.
No one should watch it again. Listen to us have a rant about it, but it's a short episode. So, Dark Knight Rises, Christian Bale returns as Bruce Wayne, as do Michael Caine as Alfred Pennyworth and Gary Oldman as Jim Gordon. There are new additions to the cast, primarily Joseph Gordon-Levitt as John Blake, Robin John Blake, Anne Hathaway as Catwoman or Selina Kyle, and she's a very different incarnation from Michelle Pfeiffer, and Tom Hardy as Bane. Again, very different incarnation from earlier Batman films. Bruce Wayne has sunk lots of his money into a clean energy project championed by another new face, Marion Cotillard's Miranda Tate, which is hijacked by Bane, a former member of the League of Shadows, for the purpose, once again, of destroying Gotham. And you know where it's going from there. So, Rob.
Yes. How do I say this? This film is a very good-looking shambles. There is a video on YouTube, I believe it's by the Nerd Writer, but I could be wrong about that, talking about how Zack Snyder, in the way he makes films, tried to create moments. He makes moments in his films. But they are unearned moments. The emotive weight of a moment is unearned. A theory I agree with in terms of Snyder. But watching this film, it struck me more than anything else that is who Nolan is when it comes to narrative. He wants narrative weight and he wants narrative moments, but he doesn't earn them at any point. We are just told, Bane, super terrorist. That's all we're told, we're just told he is. And yes, we see his first attack on the plane. That's a very wonderfully choreographed scene, but it's a triumph of filmmaking. It's not a triumph of the character. And we have this unearned idea that he's this super terrorist, and the idea that he has this, you know, massive underground army, and he's 10 steps ahead of everyone else. It's all unearned. And it's just like he's using these cultural shortcuts that we think we understand, but doesn't actually earn them in any sense of narrative. I think that there are some great moments in this. I think Bane particularly is a very strong character, and I think Catwoman is a very strong character in this. I think that the logical leaps it makes and the hoops it jumps through to give weight to Batman's actions, to give clarity to his actions, and to give, I suppose, visual impressiveness to actions make no sense in the real world. As we discussed on that first episode, talking about Batman Begins, if you want realism, and if you're going for realism, then I will judge you on realism. And this film very much jumps a shark when it comes to realism. He breaks his back and gets it better by being punched better. And if that isn't a metaphor for the entire film in a nutshell, that he punches a broken spine better, I'm not sure what is. Sam, what's your view on the film?
He also, not only is punch better, but managed to recover from broken back in 5 months.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I know that in the grand scheme of this Batman narrative, it was supposed to be me taking a stand for Nolan against Rob. And I was happy to do that with The Dark Knight, which I think for all its flaws is quite enjoyable, and I quite like Batman Begins. I've Yeah, I'm not putting up a fight for The Dark Knight Rises. I never thought I'd say this, but sometimes I miss the emotional complexity of the earlier films. And that sounds ridiculous when you think about someone like the Riddler and the garishness or the neon tones of Batman and Robin. But just take someone like Selina Kyle, for example, like Michelle Pfeiffer's Selina Kyle and her apartment in Batman Returns, and you have sort of how she was before the transformation and then how she was during the transformation, and Hello There becomes Hell Here, and it was just clever, and and you could just you saw more about the emotional background of that character. And I see what you're saying about Nolan not earning things he's going for. An example of this with Selina Kyle, I think, is that scene towards the end where there's the mayhem going on and her girlfriend leans over to her and basically asks her what's up, and she has this moment where she thinks about isn't it terrible what's happened to this family? There was a family here, and she's looking at a photo, and you think, well, yeah, this is the first time we've seen you as a character who would have that sort of response. And Nolan doesn't earn that at all. That comes from nowhere. She was a wisecracker, and she was, even when you saw the interior of her apartment, there was no vulnerability at all until that moment. So that's my first response. Things I liked about the film, I like the character of Bruce Wayne being vulnerable. I mean, Bruce Wayne having lost his money, so I did quite like that about the character, but I'm struggling really, because most of all I find myself, and I don't know whether this is because Anne Hathaway and Tom Hardy are brilliant actors and Christian Bale isn't, but I found myself siding with the bad guys. Like, when you get Selina Kyle saying a storm is coming, and Bane talks about corruption in Gotham and eradicating that, like, neither of these seem to be bad things. I found myself thinking, well, what these two characters stand for is revolution, and revolution against the establishment, against authority, and why is that a bad thing?
You know how I like my film theories? I like my theory about my fan theories and stuff. I think what they're trying to do here is they're trying to put up this mirror image between Bane and Batman. They are physically dominating. Both wear a mask. Bane's mask is almost the negative of Batman's mask. Mm. But there's this idea that they are organised with toys and things. But it's this, I don't know, it's, you've got to look at this film made in what? 2012. So this is the height of, you know, the 1% and Occupy America and that kind of stuff. Mm. In which we have, this film basically presents the idea that the 99% rising up against 1% is a lie, and it takes a incredibly rich, superpowered billionaire and his cronies to stop
them. Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The Bane is standing up for the little guy, and that's he's starting revolution. You think, why is that supposed to be a bad thing?
Alfred has this moment. He's like, they don't need your body. Give them your money and your time and your brain. You can do so much in Gotham that doesn't involve you being Batman. And it's just this, I suppose, there's always been this undercurrent in Batman that he's this kind of neoconservative wet dream of this libertarianism, American right-wing power to the billionaires. He's earned it, he has the right to do what he wants, you know. Poor people are the enemy, you know, that kind of, military industrial complex wet dream of a character. And in other films, they play it off in minor ways, they make him funny, they make it silly. But in this film, I couldn't help but think, I bet a whole swathe of the right-wing political culture adore Batman. Mm. Because it's just like, well, the few, well, they've earned that, you know. This whole world is designed to defend the 1%, and it takes, you know, they have to stick in this nuclear bomb to try and make you care. But it's just like, as you say, I'm with revolution here.
Mm.
You know, the Gotham is destitute and is built on a lie. Whether you like it or not, and whether it's an interesting narrative trick, it's built on a lie. The lie of Dent. Mm. And also, just a quick aside, I am a bit bitter because my favourite Batman comic story of all time is No Man's Land, and on which this is based, but based in a very, very, very loose way. And it forgets all the best parts of No Man's Land in favour of other things, really.
Well, what should it have had in it?
Well, No Man's Land essentially isn't a terrorist uprising. It isn't that. It is a series of natural disasters and other things before Gotham, and it is sealed off by America and going, you know what, you are a disaster zone, and we're just going to seal you off and leave you to it. And it's all about who is Batman in a time of no rules. If he isn't vigilante justice, what does he stand for in a time where there is no justice? If there is no law, there's no enforceable hierarchy of society, how does Batman work? It's a very, I mean, it also, you have a lot more of the characters. Everyone sort of carves up the city into their own district. They're very much on gangland. But it's very interesting in terms of what Batman does. And here, it just didn't have any of that nuance. It just had, I don't know, narrative tricks.
Mm.
You know, the death of Batman, inverted commas, you know, is foreshadowed early on by the autopilot. But then he says to Fox, I never fixed it, and never got it fixed, which is a lie. It's a clear lie, but there's no reason for that lie at all. And this is what I was going to say, the unearned narrative, is the clean energy thing. It's a MacGuffin. It's just a MacGuffin. You know, oh, we've got this clean energy thing. It just works. Hurrah!
Mm.
And, you know, his relationship with Talia, it's just like, well, they're in love. Hurrah! Like, at the start of the film, he's moping over his lost love. And then you never really see him fall in love with Miranda Tate. They're just in love.
Mm.
And just for the payoff of her betrayal at the end of it. And same with Catwoman. Like, there isn't a lot of chemistry between Catwoman and Christian Bale. And once again, you don't see the interim steps that earn them that. You know, he retires from being Batman for her, with her. And it's like, well, where did that come from? Because he was in love with someone else at the start of the film, in love with someone else with the film, and suddenly at the end he's with you. It just...
Mm.
It all just felt like narrative checklists and rather than unearnedness.
Yeah. Thinking about it, and thinking about something you said about Dark Knight last week, you weren't sure why Batman Begins needed to exist. I'm not sure why this film needed to exist either. The Dark Knight... And actually, the Dark Knight, the original comic, is a brilliant story. But the Dark Knight, the film, is like quite a nice little self-contained narrative. Why does it need this neocon wet dream coming afterwards, or the unnecessary backstory beforehand? It seems like what Nolan has done is sort of take a good film and explode it into a universe.
Batman doesn't retire. You know, the whole point of Batman is he's driven to do these things. He doesn't get to retire. Mm. And you don't, like, he doesn't pass the mantle on to Robin. Robin doesn't become Batman. Robin is the psychic, is the team. Robin is about Batman learning to be a father and be a family and to grow the Bat family. The whole point of the Robin character is to stop hit to reach beyond his lone personality into realizing to care for somebody else. But they just disregard that in terms for some, you know, last 5 minute trickery.
Mm. I'm not going to defend Batman vs Superman at all. This will be the last mention of it today. But that was something that actually worked quite well about Ben Affleck's presentation of the character, that you understood that this was a man who had, it had been 8 long years since he'd had to be the hero, and he realised he couldn't retire. I mean, that was one thing that you bought into about the film. I mean, there were many other things that were terrible about it, but is that yet Nolan has this idea that he can do what he wants with the character, which sounds sounds a bit like I'm being a needy fanboy about it, but I'm not really at all. I'm just like, Nolan seems to think he can do certain things with the character, which, like you say, are not earned in the first place.
Well, I mean, I think this is, I would agree. I think if you talk about being a needy fanboy, if we look at our Yulman discussion of Catwoman from the earlier film, like in the comic book, she's a jewel thief. She is who she is in this film. That's her backstory. They change it massively for the 5-for-1, but it works because it's earned. You understand the process of which she became Batman, became Catwoman.
Yeah.
So it's not about being slavish to the history or to the canon. It's about earning that. And it felt like a series of narrative moments he wanted to have, and narratively he wanted Batman to get his back broken. He wanted these fancy scenes in the prison. He wanted, you know, the idea of this bomb travelling around. He wanted the betrayal by Marion Tate, Rand Deaton. And he just strung scenes together without earning them. And also, I think, plumped it full of random fluff. Matthew Modine's character in this, who plays the Foley, the sort of second in command in the police. I have no idea why that character is in the film. Not a clue.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Bern Gorman playing Stryver, who's sort of the second assistant to Daggett. Why are there two people? I don't know. Why is there a bizarre scene in which the Better Horses turn up? They turn up and get killed straight away. And it just felt like he had all these ideas and just crammed them all in rather than pairing it back into a good film. Regardless of my issues about the first film when Batman Begins, it is a lean superhero film. It has a through line through it. This is just a messy shambles, and that ignores the logical leaps in logic in the film. In, you know, that suddenly after all these years where Batman's been away, suddenly Bruce Wayne comes out of retirement, as does Batman, on the same day. Like, no one's noticing this. No one's noticing that he went away the same day as Batman, even. No one's questioning sending all the police into the, you know, every cop, 3,000 cops. It's just, the logic behind this makes no sense. And, yeah, it lost me.
And, if they wanted to finish off Jim Gordon, why did they choose that particular moment and send two not particularly, I don't know, they weren't particularly advanced fighters. If you want to make sure of someone who you see as a credible threat, don't you respond to that credible threat in kind rather than just treating him as a bit expendable?
It was all full of unearned moments. And they were cool moments. Like, you know, the opening scene in Bane, amazing. Very cool.
Yeah.
The Bane fight, very cool. The sort of street fight on Gotham, really cool. But it doesn't make sense in terms of the overarching sort of narrative.
I will say that for Nolan, actually. It's something you said right at the beginning. This is a good-looking shambles because he can do a really impressive visual set piece. Like for all his other flaws, he can't. I mean, that sequence of the plane, entirely unnecessary, but just so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Just, and as I said, I have no problem with silly films. I have no problem with spandex filled explosion extravaganzas. I have no problem with that whatsoever. You know, I will live and die by Batman Forever and these films, but if you want to be portraying, as you say, realism and bringing a realism, not grittiness, because we've got the gritty reboots with Batman vs Superman, realism, you've got to stick with that. You can't just do what you want if your calling card is realism. So Sam, save us. Do you have some recommendations?
I do. First one is, we haven't talked much about Bane. Tom Hardy is one of my favourite actors of recent times. I think he's excellent, and I would give a shout out to my favourite film of last year, The Revenant. Leo got most of the plaudits for that, and most of the hype was around his Oscar for that and the performance as a central character. But the supporting cast, particularly Hardy himself and also young Will Poulter, were very, very good. And secondly, before finishing Nolan, I think it'd be remiss not to mention a film which, although it's flawed, we both like, and which also has a Joseph Gordon-Levitt link and coincidentally a DiCaprio link as well. It's 2010's Inception.
I would say one of the few Nolans that I actually like. As if anyone's followed us on Twitter, my rant this week is one of the few Nolans which I actually do enjoy. So yeah.
What about you?
Well, I've kind of done similar to you. Is my first recommendation is the link is Hardy. As you say, I think he's one of the best actors of the generation. And I do have a small claim to fame, having met him back in my film days. And he's a thoroughly lovely man. But the film I'm going to recommend is a film that was very divisive in one of our early podcasts. And that is the film from 2 years ago now, Mad Max Fury Road, in which he plays Max. I maintain this is probably the best film in the last 10 years. Sam isn't quite as heaping praise on it, but for me it was amazing, and he was a large part of that. It isn't a film that I feel I need picking up because it got a lot of plaudits. But if you watched Dark Knight Rises and you thought that man's something to watch, this is where you watch him. So yeah, Mad Max Fury Road.
If you want to see a road trip that goes nowhere and then comes back, then fine.
You wait. We do Lord of the Rings. That's a lot of walking. Oh, anyone who follows me on Letterboxd, I put my review of this film up this morning when I finished watching the film. And I mentioned that of the 2.5 stars I gave it, 1 star was for Hardy, and at least 1 other star was for Anne Hathaway. So my other recommendation is an Anne Hathaway link. And that is a film that's very much not in my usual wheelhouse. And that is 2011's One Day. Based on the book by Dave Nichols, it's in many ways a straight rom-com starring Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess as two college friends, and we see them every year on the same date and how their lives progress and how they move forward from there. I saw it, I can't remember where, but it just really touched me. It really kind of spoke many things to me, and it's, I really kind of just loved it, really. It isn't one that gets talked about a lot, but for me, it really was a film that I definitely enjoyed start to end. I haven't read the book to comment on how it compares to the book, but Anne Hathaway is brilliant in it. In every year she's been, I think she's one of the greater talents on screen currently, and this is one of her best films. So, One Day.
Speaking of Anne Hathaway, have you seen Colossal yet?
I haven't. I really, really, really want to.
Yeah, I would have thought that would be...
It's right up my street, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I've heard very good things about it. I haven't seen it either, but it strikes me as something you should see.
I very much want to. So, we've now finished the Batman franchise. We've gone through all 7 movies over the last 7 weeks. Any overarching thoughts, then?
To be honest, the Nolan films were not as good as I remember them. Batman and Robin was pretty much as terrible as I was expecting. And the first three were pretty good. There is nothing that would jump to the forefront of my mind as being an amazing film or a particularly good acting performance out of those three, but I thought they were sort of generally passable films.
Okay. I would, one thing I'd say is that one thing I noted in my notes is that most of the Batmen have been vaguely forgettable.
Yes. Yeah.
And the bad guys in almost every film have been far more standout and far more interesting characters. And it's interesting that in the way a Superman film generally is about Superman, these films seem to be about the bad guys. And I think that's a very interesting kind of difference between the two characters. Also, I would say I'm glad that the people are starting to see the light about Nolan films. They were lauded so much when they released. I'm glad that people are starting to see that actually they're just terrible.
I'll see if I can find it. There's an interesting academic article about the neocon loving for Dark Knight Rises that was particularly sceptical about it. So I'll see if I can find that.
So, having done the Batmans, what's next for us then?
Next, we are going particularly old school. It's a franchise that's been around for a good 30 years now. And it is, well, not 30 years, not quite 30 years. I'm not that old. It is Mike Myers' Wayne's World films.
Till then, guys, you can find us on Twitter at Pretty Podcast.
You can find just me at life_academic.
And you can find just me at Rob Kaiju, genuinely rowing about how bad Nolan is. All right, guys, we'll see you back next week with Wayne's World.
The Prestige is a Kaiju Industries production. Check out their other work at facebook.com/Kaiju Industries. Rawr! Arrgh.